There it goes.
The logic doesn't go both ways.
Right?
It says
recording.
Okay. We're now in a cone of silence. The time is 6:34. We will call the meeting of the Human Services Committee to order. Ms. Davis, if you could call the roll, please. I know. Is it okay that we do that? I'd like to do that if we could.
Okay.
Dean
Coleman.
Present.
Aaron Decker.
Yep.
David Arrington. Boy Frederick?
Here.
Andy Montemiro?
Here.
David Nudo?
Yep.
Amy Johnson?
Here.
Jacob Genther?
Here.
And Stephanie Kuro-Villa?
Supervisor Arrington did send me a text earlier today and said that he was going to be in Chicago. So
okay.
His absence is known. We do have a youth and governance member. Would you like to introduce her?
How about you introduce yourself?
All right. I'm Jacob Genther. I'm new to the any government. My dad is the chief of joint service. He just got the job, so my connection.
Oh. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
You want to introduce yourself, Slushy?
Boyd Frederick. I'm a supervisor from District 14, which is the west side of the city of Kenosha.
All right.
David Hallman, county supervisor of the 7th District and chair of the Human Services Committee.
Keith Nuda, supervisor of the 12th District.
Aaron Decker, District 22.
Anita Johnson, District 18. It's Pleasant Prairie in Bristol. And I just want to mention I had the opportunity to spend a few hours with your dad the week before last. He's a wonderful man.
Thank you.
Angie Montemiro, District 4. And I'm Sharon Davis. I record the meetings.
All right.
So, welcome. And certainly, if you have any questions, you have Supervisor Decker. This is a stupendous mentor for you, and the committee is open to you. I'm open to you, as is those that are working in county government. So feel free to ask anything at any time, anywhere.
All right, thank you.
If they look at you strange.
Okay.
Are there any citizen comments? Please come forward. 5 minutes.
Thank
address
you.
The committee.
Chairman. My name is Jack Rose, 4315 68th Street, Kenosha. I am here as a advocate for mental health awareness here in Kenosha County. Currently the president of the National Alliance on Mental Illness for Kenosha County. Our purpose is to improve the quality of life for people affected with mental illness here in the county. We do this through education, support, and advocacy. And we promote recovery and we continually fight stigma. And I know one of the agenda items tonight deals with the Office of Justice Assistance Grant. We are quite proud that we have started crisis intervention team training here in Kenosha County. It's been a collaborative effort between the county and Department of Aging and Disability Services, mental health manager, and the person Jim Trushan. Also, we have collaborated with Gateway Technical College, which provides us a site. We also work with the Kenosha Police Department and the Kenosha Sheriff's Department. We started this effort in August of 2007 by sending 3 officers to Appleton for training. At that time, NAMI provided room and board for our officers to go there. It's a 40-hour training, 5 days. A very intense training that gives a police officer a better toolkit to be able to handle people with mental illness, people in crisis. You fast forward, and in 2010, we started holding our own crisis intervention team training here at Gateway Technical College. And we have since, we're scheduled for our 3rd crisis intervention team training here at Gateway in September. And in the past, we have utilized funding from a Southeastern Wisconsin Crisis Grant. And this is provided to pay for the training. Training is at no charge to the law enforcement agencies. The Office of Justice Assistance Grant was an opportunity that came forward, a very short timeline, and again, working together with the county, all local law enforcement agencies. We requested the grant. We received the grant. Jennifer Madore was a great deal of assistance in putting the document together. We also got great support from all our law enforcement agencies. In fact, for our scheduled class on September 17th to the 21st, we have already 22 law enforcement officers that have signed up. And this has been cooperation from Kenosha Police Department, Kenosha County Sheriff's Department, University of Wisconsin Parkside, Pleasant Prairie, Twin Lakes. And we have an outstanding training program. And with this OJA grant, it'll be the first time that we can provide overtime and backfill to the agencies that provide the officers. The training does not cost them anything, but when you pull somebody off the line for 40 hours, somebody has to cover them. So we truly support that. We hope that we can continue our collaborative effort in the county with respect to mental health awareness. And it's very appropriate that this month is Mental Illness Awareness Month. And I invite all of you. Tomorrow night we have a candlelight vigil right across the street in Civic Center Park that will begin at 6 p.m. And it is to increase our community's mental health awareness. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There was also a reception. Now, where is that? Is that the NAMI headquarters?
Yes. No, it's right over at Bridges Community Center. We have a very small office there. It's an office front on 7th between 57 and 58. And that reception will begin at 5 p.m. And the candlelight vigil will start at 6 p.m. So if you can join us. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other citizen comments?
Aye. Mr. Chair, two things I'd like to say. First is I'd like to congratulate Mr. Rogers for the award, the Commissioner's Award that I read about in the paper today for Human Services. So I just wanted on the record I congratulate him for that award, that Commissioner's Award. The second thing I would like to say is I do support Frank for the Workforce Development Board. He does fit what will work. Well, I did support him until he let his phone go off. I think he will fill the city's niche in what we need in the Workforce Development Board. He's certainly a qualified candidate. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have.
Any other citizen comments?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I didn't come here for the speak on Mr. Pacetti's appointment, but seeing that I'm here and he's here, I'd like to tell you I support it. I've worked with Frank on City Council. As a matter of fact, they just got done with a meeting with him with Joint Services, which he was one of the key players, very productive, very knowledgeable, and I think a very good asset to be appointed to Workforce Development Board.
Thank you. Any other citizen comments? All right. Seeing no other citizen comments, is closed. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Frederick, second by Supervisor Decker. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye.
Sorry, aye.
You're supposed to vote first.
Oh, aye.
I'll make a note. Agenda item 4, resolution to approve the county executive appointment of Frank Pacetti to the Workforce Development Board. Mr. Pacetti, if you don't mind taking the hot seat. Hello? Good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening. Very good. Thank you.
Is there anything in particular you wish to?
The county executive approached me for this appointment a few months back. I've been to a number of meetings of the Workforce Development Board in my capacity as the city administrator for the city. He was looking for a voting member from city representation, and I thought obviously I respect the county executive's wishes and more than happy to serve on his behalf should this committee wish to appoint him.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, but the Job Center manager wanted to give some comments about Mr. Olmstead.
There you go.
You can say that.
Oh, by all means, pull up a chair.
That's fine. Just to bring everybody's attention, as required by the Workforce Investment Act 1998, all workforce boards have required membership. In this case, the Workforce Board is required to have a member of the city government. Mr. Pacetti is the City of Kenosha City Administrator, along with his 25 years as a private sector employer, is a great match in fulfilling its legislation. We're excited to have him with his wealth of experience and knowledge as a member of the Workforce Board, and of course, he is here available for questions. I am Doug Parks. I am the new Job Center Manager.
You're not new anymore.
If we could get a copy of that as well, that would be great. Because I'm sure there will be other county supervisors that will have questions. Does the committee have any questions for Mr. Pacetti?
I've known Mr. Pacetti longer than as long as I can remember. I think he'd be a great addition to the Workforce Development Board.
I make a motion to approve the appointment.
Second.
A motion by Supervisor Becker, second by Supervisor Johnson. Ethan Governor.
Hi. I don't know what I say.
That's fine.
I abstain.
Okay.
Okay. Let the record show Supervisor Montemaro abstains. Everyone else, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? One abstention, Supervisor Montemaro. The chair votes aye. Thank you, Mr. Pacetti. You are confirmed from this committee. Agenda item 5, disability dads. Resolution to modify the 2012 budget to add the Office of Justice Assistance Award.
Be my topic, sir. I'm Jim Trushan, manager of Mental Health and Health Protective Services. I think Jack, President Rose from NAMI of Kenosha County, has really done a really nice description of what our grant is, but this is all an effort to enhance the efficiency and collaborative quality we have with local law enforcement, meaning our own sheriff's department, and all the other smaller law enforcement agencies around us who may not be able to provide adequate behavioral health training for officers as they encounter challenging situations in the community. We've done this training before through previous grants, and as Jack mentioned, this grant allows us to pay for officers' time. So if you had an interest, this is sort of a typical curriculum looks like for the week-long training. And it really involves a mix of education around issues of psychopathology, drug and alcohol abuse, community resources, updates on current mental health law, which is usually Chapter 51. The responsibility of the county to provide behavioral health care, and all of the service options we have. We come to it with a sort of a vested interest in that to make our budget dollars stretch as far as possible. We don't want to overtreat people. We want to set the right level of care. And if we have untrained folks in the community, often they opt for more expensive inpatient care or state institute care, which is $1,000 a day. We can really treat people quite successfully in the community for quite a bit less than that. But most often, law enforcement officers really have a huge burden of laws to know, and it's hard for them to really appreciate all the resources we have. So we've really been putting a lot of effort into this, doing a lot of different things. It's great to see new supervisors here, but we've done jail diversion, mental health court diversion, crisis intervention partner training, which is for anybody in the community that is a stakeholder, which is a two-day training, and now this. So I think that's pretty much the program in a nutshell.
Could I ask a question?
Oh. Sure.
Do you coordinate with Racine law enforcement also? Because most of the admission for any psychiatric illness ends up in Racine. do you mean?
Right. Well, they emanate in Kenosha County. There have been some talk with another grant to do a regional training. Racine applied for the same grant and got the same grant.
He got it also?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because I was going to say that might be a way, if you train together, maybe you can charge Racine then. I love Kenosha.
Yeah.
Some cash, no. But it's good that you work together because their facility is the one that houses them.
Yeah, that's on the radar screen. On the radar screen, because we know that these dollars are not going to be
forever.
And so we've talked about doing a collaboration with other counties. Not quite yet, but we may be headed there. And the thought is, because this is so intensive of what the local resources are, maybe having 3 days jointly with another county in the last 2 days or 1 day in the county. The other thing you want to notice about this is our staff, to keep costs low, are very heavily involved with this. Really, the two keynote speakers are Dr. David Mays, who just does an interesting and very informative job of talking about mental illness as a brain disease, current science. And then the also one is Dr. Abrams, who's a developmental psychologist, who talks about de-escalation. Often officers taught to take command of a situation, which means raising a voice. That can be a trigger to some folks. And so we try to help the officers through role play, sort of learn to read what technique to use, not to escalate conflict inadvertently. And I think the officers have done really wonderfully. As a matter of fact, we do it at Gateway Technical. They have a small little city, their training facility. They can have an apartment, they can have a restaurant or a bar. Last time we did this, we simulated a street where there was traffic. Because how an officer would respond to a situation where there's traffic would be different than in an apartment where there was only one exit door. So we really try to get this down. As Jack said, well, I don't know if he said today, we had a similar training crisis intervention at Gateway, and we had 48, 49 people?
51 finished.
So the community of Kenosha County is, in my view, and perhaps Joe would concur, very thirsty about having knowledge. And I never would have anticipated that we would have gotten this level of support 10 years ago.
Fantastic.
So this would be 20 law officers, did you say?
Yeah, 20, or 22, you said?
Between 20 and 22 that have committed already. And this is the largest we've ever had for play.
Yeah, we really run a thing. We like to do skill developments, not only teaching and knowledge, but it's actual officer with their buddy to de-escalate the situation. So we don't like to get much beyond 20. And of course, we used to
say... Would it be a year? A year? Or would
20
you like
a session. 20
okay.
A session.
Okay. How many sessions per year?
We have been doing just one.
Just one.
And primarily, again, the biggest barrier is it's quite a burden, a financial burden for law enforcement. Your father was part of this, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, he was a very definite supporter of this. When we talked to the sheriff and Chief Morrissey and Sheriff Beth and Chief Wagner and all of them, they'd say, hey, look, we'd love to send people, and it's wonderful you can find funding and provide our officers, but we've got to fill their squads in the community. Especially President Prairie, uses KPD a lot to cover when they only have a few officers on the beat. So if they send one car, that reduces their manpower by 25%.
It's a shame. It would be nice to have a larger percentage trained.
Yeah, and we're sort of taking it as a long-term kind of a project. The other wonderful thing I'd like to mention about this, it brings us a lot of information about our county-funded services, some good, some not so good. They may disagree with some of the decisions made by the crisis intervention team. We expose ourselves to getting a lot of constructive feedback, but I think that's really a good thing because, frankly, a lot of staff that present are frontline staff and are not really used to that kind of exposure, I think that's sort of a secondary benefit of, hearing that kind of criticism.
Since Mr. Rose has been very much part of this process, if he'd like to pull up a
well,
chair.
Well, no, if I just, one question, or one comment to your question, you know, we started the CIT training, the five-day training for law enforcement in 2007. We have moved forward. To date, we have trained 62 officers, and we started the crisis intervention partner training in 2010 at Gateway. And to date, with today's class of 51, we've got 273. And today we had a lot of people from the jails. We had probation, parole. We had some of the ER nurses from the hospitals, the jail nurses. And so we talk of building a circle of care in Kenosha County. And you've got the law enforcement at the first responders, and then we're trying to change and train the second tier here. And it's all...
That's good to hear. I think one of the worst situations is when it's totally unidentified. It slips by completely, so the more we know.
And to Jim's point, too, about what we learned from this, we're very responsive to the evals or the discussions that started the training. And one came up, we had a group of dispatchers, and there was an issue sometime in response time between crisis and law enforcement. And we stepped up, and they improved the process. So I think it's good back to law enforcement that we make some progress.
Supervisor Decker, did you still have a question?
We have new supervisors and a new youth and governance. What does NAMI stand for?
National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Okay. And CIT is?
Crisis Intervention Team Training.
There you go. Thank you.
CIP is Crisis Intervention Partner Training. Okay.
This committee is like death by acronyms. So just.
I actually knew those ones from my work.
Chairman, yes. Was there anything else?
I just wanted to clarify.
Through the chair, I'd like to ask you guys, is there any move to have a special unit within law enforcement or be a first responder to that that's had the training?
That's an excellent point. I've communicated with the City of Madison Police because my peer in Madison had told me that they have CIT specialized officers that are available every shift, and that if a family requests it, you can get a CIT trained officer. We have to hit a certain critical mass of having enough officers trained, you know, to do that. There have been, especially the younger officers have really volunteered. Younger people come in and they want to, you know, they're very interested. They come with a whole different perspective of behavioral health. So that's a good point. We got to, you know, keep on.
Yeah, I would think that would be something you would want to have in your first response if you know that type of situation could be there, is to have somebody who's had the training do that. So I just a question.
Yeah, I mean, right now we're at a point where we're trying to get represented on each ship, and that's working. We also have Sergeant John Rohde, who is the new training officer for the Kenosha Police Department. He's also a member of the board of directors for Kenosha County, so we're really trying to build this nucleus. And CIT is a volunteer program.
You should totally pull up a chair. It's a lot less scary the more people, you know, for you, I've sat here, it's a lot less scary, so come on up. It's much better.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, thank you. Supervisor
Marsmore? I have a question. Do the new police officers get trained in mental health anyway?
Minimally.
Okay,
minimally.
So there's some exposure, at least in training. And second, are these sessions taped? Because that's another way to get the data out. If these lectures are great, you know.
Yeah, they can be.
That would be a nice way, too, for people who want to do it on their own. They could listen to those two speakers.
Yeah, we.
But I think one thing there, with the interaction, is really try to get the training.
Okay.
You really need that. You really need that firsthand comment at this point.
The only other comment I would have is suicides listed as 23 in Kenosha last year. If that's that number, then the better you guys are at this, the better it is, you know. And that's another reason Madison had, with the school there. Very active in suicide prevention. Their suicide rate is, you know, not to say anything bad, but that's why they have first responders. They have to have them. But many students are facing that problem. So
Yeah, we've, as a part of this, we've been out to UW Parkside. Kind of Jackson came along and we talked about there was sort of issues of coordination, collaboration, them wanting, you know, everybody wants to move the folks through the emergency room if they have to go to the inpatient facility on a quick basis, but you know, there are sometimes there's confidentiality issues you have to work through. They were wondering about if there's a person who's hospitalized, do they have access to their medical record? He said there's a limit, you know, you have to have the permission of the patient. But they're concerned, of course, for you know their student safety. And they have their own counseling center who's very interested in coordinating with our treatment system.
I started the suicide, the new suicide prevention program in Madison 2 years ago. And it was brought to the state of Wisconsin, and the chairman of all the UW colleges are going to bring it to every single college. So that's part of the push at Parkside, because it's mandated by Mr. Riley from that program. And we have successively decreased some of the suicide in Madison. And I'm sure if law enforcement gets on board with this, it can really help.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful you're doing that.
Yeah, and I think we ought
yeah,
to
we
extend a thank
yeah.
you to the Law Enforcement Academy at Gateway.
Yes,
because they've
wonderful.
Been wonderful. One of the, really one of the wonderful experiences here has been being able to work with a lot of folks who are willing to come to the table and collaborate. And everybody brings a little piece, you know, and you have to develop relationships over a period of time. So Jack has been a wonderful catalyst. You know, and to help, because a lot of times people can sit in their own little isolated camps and point fingers at one another, and that's not good. The wonderful quality of this community is we know one another and we like to talk and get some things done.
I was pleasantly surprised to see it listed under a grant, because it seems mental health, even for that matter, and research under, you know, mental disease is always the low end of funding.
Yeah,
so
we planned
so.
The other challenge too. When I first accepted this position here, I had noticed I'd gone through the Human Service Committee meeting minutes for the last 5 years, and noticed that up until recently, mental health, behavioral health issues really didn't make it to this body. You know, I mean, you can do the same, take a look back, and I think in the last couple of years, we've been a lot more, you know, we've done mental health jail diversion, the drug court has been a big issue, these grants, you know, some other issues along the way. So we would, I would, personally, and upon and from Jack, we've talked about this, when we have the next crisis intervention partner training, we'd like to invite each of you. It's a two-day thing, and you can come in, and you know, but I think what we discussed, the mental health managers in Southeast Wisconsin, is the need to do a better education of our governing bodies. We talk here, we use a lot of acronyms, we speak in all sorts of stuff, and we expect you guys to understand, and it's, you know, it's very difficult. So I think we can do a better job of at least letting you know what our responsibilities are and how we do that. It works.
Please invite us. Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? I have a few. The first is I'm noting that this is not required to go to judiciary and law, which is fine that it's not, but has there been any thought to at least going and speaking to them, updating them?
As much as we do, we report to you, but I share the same information with the Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee, with Chief Judge Wagner,
sure.
Chief Morrissey, Sheriff Beth, public defender in that group, but if asked, we would gladly go.
I think they would certainly appreciate it.
Okay.
And I guess secondly, I don't know how much sense this makes, but, and this would be probably a better question for them, the judiciary and law, to have a certain percentage, perhaps, of the folks on shift that have gone through this training, to set a commitment to that through resolution to say that we're willing to do this. Not necessarily that the money will always be there, but that we're at least committed to that, and when funds are available, whether it's public or private money, to help try to make that happen, to fulfill it, to set a floor.
I think it really was a precedent this time, because in the past we've had generally 16 officers. And when we had an opportunity for this funding, and of course it was to the benefit of the law enforcement agencies as well, everybody really signed up, you know, that put it to 2022. So that was very, very positive as far as commitment.
Yeah, Jack had mentioned that we had done so many previous trainings. I think we're at a point where we always like a couple headliners and those noteworthy speakers, you know, that helps raise our credibility. But a lot of this, we have our own internal capacity to do. You know, more and more we're less reliant on outside speakers. And in fact, our focus is we really want a connection between those officers or community members and the actual crisis worker who would go up and do a call, maybe even the doctor that the patient would see, or, you know, the actual people they would run into. That kind of connection, you know, outside of human services to other linked agencies, is invaluable.
You're welcome to call up anytime. And also, I think at the Parkside program, they have the Parkside, security, you know?
They have university that's
yes,
place.
Exactly. And the more people exposed to this, the better. It's data that can only help everybody.
We had two of them come to our last CIT.
Even just dialogues. Opening up dialogues about it to get rid of the stigma.
The other thing is, you're going to have more of this problem because as funding goes down, unfortunately, the mental illness people have less, and more of them are forced to be not in supervised scenarios, and that's why this is such an issue. Yeah. It just is.
All right. Thank you for this.
Okay.
The invite. Are there any other questions before they go? Or? Send me an email with the information about so we can notify.
Oh, yes,
so that,
I'm on Judiciary Law Committee.
And actually, it's tentatively scheduled
November 12th and 13th.
Please send an email. If you send with a little Outlook attachment, that would be extraordinarily helpful. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
What is the committee's pleasure?
I make a motion to approve the resolution to modify the budget.
Motion by Supervisor Decker, second by Supervisor Frederick. You can have me?
I agree, yes.
Committee?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Okay. Agenda item number 6, employment update. Hello. Did you bring a friend? It's a lot less scary when you bring a friend. You can support closer. This would be so much easier if we had food, but we don't. Got like a bucket of cookies at home.
Yeah, we do.
As a joint
service.
I was going to say, I missed dinner, a bucket of chicken sounds like.
I could go for a bucket of chicken right now.
Snickers over here.
Give my candy.
I thought they were smokes.
No, they don't. I eat.
You have trouble.
Okay.
You could please introduce yourselves to the committee and proceed as you wish.
My name is Doug Bartz. I am the Job Center Manager for Kenosha County.
And I'm Emily Green, Division Director for Workforce Development.
I brought some information tonight, as requested, regarding employment and unemployment in Kenosha County. All the information I'll be presenting is in the handouts under number 6. Starting with the unemployment rates, you may ask why they are a little bit behind. The new numbers aren't released for anywhere between about 20 to 25 days after the month is over. So the information that I'm presenting to you is from March of 2012. As you'll see, Kenosha County as a whole in March was at 8.3% of unemployment, ranking us third out of the 72 counties. And you'll see that in the numbers provided for the last couple months, we are declining in our unemployment rate. This is something that we've seen steady over the last year or so, well, a couple years. Pretty much, Racine County is higher than us, and then Walworth County is a little bit lower. That is typical of the rates as they've been coming out. The city of Kenosha by itself ranks 9 out of the 32 major cities in Wisconsin at 9.2%. Racine is 11.9%. They're number one in the state. As compared to Lake County in Illinois, which is our closest neighbor to the south, they're at 9.5%. Our southeast WDA as a whole is at 8.5%, and then the state is at 6.8%. Over on the right, you can see, broken down, we have the county at 8.3%, the city by itself at 9.2%, the county without the city is 6.9%, which is almost equal to the state. At the bottom, you'll see Racine is the highest in the state, 11.9%, but the lowest is one of their neighbors at 3.5%.
Their county.
And then if you look at the counties as a whole, you have Menominee is the highest and Dane is the lowest. Flipping to the next page, we have a breakdown of the Job Center of Wisconsin.com listings. This was prepared again on May 3rd. We have Southeast Wisconsin, which is our WDA, which is equal to the Walworth, Kenosha, and Racine counties. And you'll see that healthcare is number one at 14% of the available openings. Management second, office administrative support third, sales related fourth. But if you look at Kenosha by itself, the healthcare stays at number one, almost accounting for 24% of the openings in Kenosha County.
All in healthcare?
All in healthcare.
Wow.
And management is number three, whereas sales and related is number two. So Kenosha County by itself, with the healthcare is right there, but in the second, third categories where we differ. Indeed.com showed 220 openings within five miles of the city of Kenosha, and Milwaukee Jobs showed 90 job openings created within the last 30 days of the same mileage area. We are seeing a large number, or a smaller number of openings, but a larger number of jobs created by that, meaning that employers are coming to us with maybe one job order, but for multiple openings. So they might come to us with an entry-level manufacturing, but there's 20 open positions. So that's why we're seeing a decrease in the numbers of posted openings. On the next page.
Did you, sir,
go ahead.
I wanted to take questions. Supervisor,
yeah, I was just looking at this, and what is this a number of requested jobs? Is that what I'm looking at on this page?
You're looking at the number of employers who are posting openings on Job Center Wisconsin.
Okay. Are you finding, I looked through all these categories twice, and I am challenged, but I don't see like a tech-type thing, like a specific welding or something like that, where, you know, I've had many discussions recently with Todd Battle and bringing businesses into Kenosha County, and I'm looking at how this data might...
They break down the categories a little bit different than what you think, and they go specific to job type versus like a manufacturing in a whole. So some of those job openings that you're discussing as well with Todd, they're represented in here, but you're not going to see just a plain manufacturing category, although the predictions for that area is tremendous job growth.
Right. And that's what I'm getting at. I think we need to be ready for that. You know, companies that want to come in and hire 100 people in a certain, you know, category are going to just flood it. And that's why I'm kind of concerned about that and looking for some different avenues to address that.
We do recognize that as a WDA, that there is going to be a skills gap when those jobs start hitting. We do have some initiatives underway to start addressing that. We have our boot camps, which we run in conjunction with Gateway, running on a regular basis. SC Johnson just gave $1 million to Gateway to assist in running those boot camps, with preference to Racine County residents. But we do have Kenosha residents that are entering into that training. This training class just started last week, as a matter of fact. But also, We have been putting in for some other funding, one of them being a Sector Alliance grant in manufacturing and the Dream It, Do It. If anybody's familiar with that, it's an initiative to bridge the skill gap by targeting youth while they're still in school and getting them involved and the knowledge to know that manufacturing is not your grandfather's job anymore. It is a clean job where you're using CNC machining in factories that are, you know, environmentally safe, and it's not that same type of blue collar work that it once was. So we have some requests in from the state to get money in those areas to start addressing that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions at the moment? Supervisor?
What are the high schools doing? You're speaking of Gateway, but you know, when I was in high school, we had tech classes, and I know that they've been phasing them out. Are they bringing them back in again, or so that way kids that are not college, wanting to go to college or even wanting to go to tech school, they can get their education in high school and then go straight to the job market?
It is something that is being looked at regionally. Schools and as well as CAVA have been getting together to start addressing that need. What the schools have stated is that there has to be interest, enough interest, for them to purpose funding to be able to do that. And what they're saying now is that the interest is not there. So we tie that back into Dream It, Do It, where we'll be going in and educating youth and presenting to them information about manufacturing to help drive that process.
I'm not sure if this would apply to your school districts, but for KUSD, I sat on the transformation committee that actually worked on partnering students with industry to help them with internships during high school years to learn different skills like that, different technical skills. It was a way to kind of offset the funding losses, the mutual beneficial relationship between industry and the schools and the students.
Good.
They have a great CNA program in high schools. A lot of the high school students go to GTI for training during high school and health, you know. So I'm sure if we got some big company wanting to come, maybe we could work with that. And they also have in high school job classes. My son started young with it, where they literally show you all these and go in and talk to them. I was a guest speaker, other manufacturing people, fire. You know, so they are interested. The high schools are interested. It's just a matter. So, Chairman, if you know of a company wants to come, you know, you just have to give us an idea what you want. And I know the contact people at Bradford that they could go and talk to them directly. They give classes on it.
Any other questions at this
point? Yeah. When you base the numbers off the front page of the unemployment, where are the numbers coming from? Because I run into friends who graduated from Parkside that have been looking now over a year, and they become discouraged by it. Now, is that included in those numbers, or are those people seeking getting unemployment compensation right now, or?
The unemployment numbers are defined by the Department of Labor. If somebody from their survey is not looking for a job in the last four consecutive weeks, they're not counted in the unemployed statistics.
Okay.
So, and that's done by a survey. As you recently saw, the numbers that were released by DWD, they actually went and surveyed 95% of the businesses in Wisconsin to actually show that there was an increase in jobs, whereas the numbers before that were based on a very small percentage, somewhere around 5%, and that showed that decline in jobs. So the numbers that were released are based on more true evidence. And so it's the numbers that are released and how they work them.
Well, I went out to the job fair. I brought my boss's college kids out there. And the one thing I noticed is, number one, there was a lot less professionals out there that were looking for work. And I saw a lot more, you know, the customer service. The other one, they were out there looking. And there was this, The time before, I drove past, and they were parked on 45. And I noticed that this time, there was actually spaces out there this time where they could get in. So I noticed the difference right there. So I see things improving. I just wanted to see, you know, because I hear it all the time where they're just discouraged at this point about job, and that's why I asked about the numbers, because I hear people that are out there still looking, trying to find something, and just say, I've given up looking at this point.
Yeah. At the job fair this afternoon, just to show a quick update, we had about 350 attendees, and there were 51 employers on site, all hiring anywhere from entry level to persons with engineering degrees. It was noticed by the employers that our attendance was down, but they said that it actually ended up being a good thing. Number one, they said that the quality of job seekers that came to this one compared to other job fairs they've attended recently were much better. And number two, they were able to spend a little bit more quality time talking to individuals instead of pushing hordes of numbers through. Mm-hmm. So all in all, we feel that the job fair this afternoon was a great success.
I attended the job fair this afternoon for about an hour or so. It was very interesting to see the conversations. That's a good idea.
Glad you were able to.
I'm glad I was too.
And then if anybody would like, I did bring a listing of the employers that were there and some of the jobs that they were working for.
I need an engineering job. I keep graduates on Saturday. Electrical engineering.
And on a side note,
thank you.
Before they left, because they're still both in college, they have multiple interviews between the two kids. So that was, I thought that was very positive, because they thought college students were going to be not find anything at all.
Are there any other questions at all? From the kid? If not, I have a few. First of all, thank you to the department for agreeing to put this on. This is a conversation that we really should have had a while ago, and for one reason or another, it seemed to miss the sight line of the county board, so it's nice to actually finally be digging into this, especially since 2008. We all know what that was about. I have a couple questions. First, is there any method that we have locally of tracking discouraged workers? I know the Bureau of Labor Statistics has a way of factoring that in, the infamous U6 number that is so all-inclusive of everything, those that are not only seeking, but those that have become discouraged and so forth. Do we have a local Kenosha County U6 equivalent?
Not to my knowledge. Unemployment is a function of job service, right, which is the state, and is sort of separate from the county area.
Second thing is do we have any information about underemployment? Or that's another Madison question, isn't it? Do we have anything recently about the education levels of our own people?
Actually, I recently conducted a survey in the job center that captures all of that information. Although it was just happening at the beginning of, end of last month, beginning of this month, and those numbers have not been compiled yet. And it's just a survey.
Do you have a projected time, date, when that'll be complete?
Are you talking the only numbers for Kenosha County itself or for job seekers?
I either one actually would, I think, be interesting, because we talk about the skills gap, and that's directly related to education. I know we had something from the 2000 U.S. Census that was put inside of the comprehensive plan that talked about the education levels of our folks, but since that time, I don't think that there's been anything else that's been done. I don't even think the American Community Survey addresses it, certainly not with the scope that the 2000 Census did. There was nothing in the 2010. The 2010 was the short form. So in terms of, for our folks, I'm sort of curious what that picture looks like.
It's going to be a very small snapshot as we give the surveys out to people that are in actually receiving services in the Employment Central, and it's voluntary, so if they choose not to turn it back in, we don't require that they do that, but it is something that we can definitely tabulate.
And for this particular job fair and all the job fairs that we have, there are surveys that they complete and indicate age range, educational levels, how long they've been unemployed, and that sort of thing. That information takes a little while to compile. I would say we have it available in a couple of weeks, though.
That would be wonderful if we could get that. Yeah, that would be incredibly helpful. I know certainly with some of the discussions that we've had with CABA, and I know the last executive committee, the question was raised about employing folks that didn't necessarily have the neatest backgrounds. Addressing some of those pieces, I think, is stuff that we need to look at as part of our economic development strategy. It's vital. We can't do it without that. Did anyone else have any
questions? One of the things, this was brought up by someone who came into my office. They went over to the job center, their English is a second language, and they could not find anything how to do a resume, how to do a cover letter in Spanish, and were actually left kind of depressed that there wasn't anything they could find. Is it there and they just didn't see it, or?
I would say that they probably did not go to the right people, because we have a broad network of people who speak, you didn't say Spanish,
yes,
to be specific. We have a broad network of staff, internal staff, that do speak Spanish, and we've had one workshop, I believe, that has been conducted exclusively in Spanish. It depends on where they went. If they went to the area that we call Employment Central, there should have been some people there that could direct them to the right place, but that should not happen. I'd be curious to know who that individual was, and we can connect him or her with the right individuals. We do have information available.
Actually, I'd like, because we have an agent in our office that is fluent in Spanish, and then all these people are coming in, and I wouldn't mind being able to give them some sort of information, because it was one of the people that came in and met with him about insurance that he came over and talked to me then about what was going on.
Because we prepare a report quarterly based on the number of people who come in and ask for language interpretation, and 99.9% of the people who ask for translation services are Spanish speaking, and we have a list of all the individuals, our staff, as well as external partners that can provide interpretation. So that service is available.
Any other questions at this point? We have more pages, so please continue.
Starting on the next page, you'll see a snapshot and a fiscal update on our WIA funding. This is the funding for all three county areas, where Racine gets about half, Kenosha gets about 36%, and Walworth getting 14%. And you can see that our carryover funds from last year are 100% depleted. Our dislocated worker grants that are requested specifically to help in certain areas, our NEGs, which are our national emergency grants, our on-the-job training, grant specific to Chrysler, and then just our regular special response grant, which is dealing with mass layoffs in the area, are about 43% expended through 75% of the year. Our regular annual allocation is just the general adult, youth, and dislocated worker budgets. Same at about 43%. And then our special grants, which are only about 17% expended. Windows to Work is primarily a Racine County area dealing with a large portion of offenders that are re-entering into the community and receive a large portion of their services while they're still incarcerated at RCI. And then the SAGE, or Sector Alliance for a Green Economy, since these numbers go through March. In April and May, we're seeing a huge increase of the expenditures there as the state has sort of loosened up some of the restrictions that they had before because they've seen that that money is not being spent like they thought it would. So they've opened it up to pay for a lot of car repairs and mileage expenses for the individuals that are receiving services to go to training. And some of them are putting on 100, 200 miles a day just to attend training. So we're going to see a huge increase in that in the next reports. We also do have some grants pending. Special response for KUSD. As you all know, there was an extreme amount of layoffs at KUSD. We held orientations, or what we called rapid response sessions at KEA. During those, the notification period on that. We have Health Professions Opportunity Grant pending with Gateway Training, or Gateway Technical College, a Water Accelerator Grant with Milwaukee Area Workforce Investment Board, and then another Health Professions Opportunity Grant with the Milwaukee Area Workforce Investment Board that are all still pending.
I was really surprised to see the difference between expended and your budget, considering this ends 6/30 of this year. Is that because of the restrictions they put?
On which brand are we speaking of?
Oh, I'm actually talking about your total, your budget and your expended of all the... Do you typically have that much overage at the end of the year?
Unfortunately, I'm not really able to speak about some of the past budgets.
Okay.
Well, this is a fiscal year.
Absolutely.
So
I was looking at the carryover funds, which were $642,000 from last year. So if we have a month left and you've expended $3 million and your budget was $6.9 million, it looks like there's going to be a big carryover. Do you lose some of that grants, or does it change how much you get the following year?
On some of this, I can actually
okay.
address some of that. A lot of these grants are not on the same fiscal year as our regular annual allocations. If you look at NEG Chrysler, which is the emergency grant that we received for the Chrysler closing, that is hugely underspent. We do calculations based on predictions of how many people we think are going to receive services. That actual grant doesn't end until September 30th of this year, so that does not end June 30th. But seeing that disparity there, that we know that that grant was underspent, and that's because we had a large amount of workers that relocated to go to other plants out of state or actually retire from the workforce that were above what our calculations were predicting.
Okay.
But to her question, do we lose that money if you don't spend it?
We will have to give some of that money back, but we are not able to use that money for anything other than what it's designated for. So the designation for Chrysler can only be used for Chrysler.
And how do we contact the employees of Chrysler who it would be applicable for?
We do the same thing that we did with KUSD.
Mm-hmm.
We go in, we hold rapid response sessions, and we get survey forms back from them. Based on that survey of the participants that actually come to the sessions is how we calculate the funding. But it's a voluntary program. We use a lot of word of mouth at those sessions to get other people to come in and get interest.
Mm-hmm.
And just because somebody did not attend one of those sessions does not mean that they cannot receive services. If they call us or come in, we've sent out mailings, we get listings. We got a list of over 270 people that were potentially going to be laid off by KUSD, and we sent letters to every single one of them. Whether or not they choose to come in,
so just real quick, this annual allocation, this one, are those grants also then? Or
that,
is that what we give you and not spend? That's...
The annual allocation is what we receive from this, the state to provide services just in that area.
I see that. Those are underspent.
But you're able to carry over.
We are, yeah, we're
yes,
able
we
to.
We used our carryover funds from the previous year.
So we're not going to lose $2 million there?
No, there we won't.
Okay, great. That's.
And Doug, this is 2012.
Program year 11?
March.
Oh, I'm sorry, through March 2012. I'm looking 2 years in the past.
Oh, yeah,
sorry for
I
that.
See that.
At the very top in the gray area, it's 2012, not 2010. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lori.
Very well done.
Thank you.
Much of this is are there any other questions from the committee? Much of this is this is state funds.
Correct. It's federal funds that go to the state and come to us.
Okay. That always makes our conversations very interesting as we do these things. Is there anything on the horizon upcoming that you've heard through Grapevine that we might want to pay attention to? Sometimes they have conversations about things at the federal level that kick over to the state. Sometimes it's nice to get a jump on these things.
I think the main thing that we have coming up is that we know that funding for next year has been cut. We know that even though our percent allocation from the state has gone up by a very small percent, we're receiving less money next year. And that's because WIA Nationwide was cut dramatically. So
WIA is, sorry?
The Workforce Investment Act.
Okay.
So in a way, it's actually going to be bittersweet that we have to carry money over because that's going to help us in the next funding year. As far as new funds coming, you can see at the bottom of the page that we listed those. And we can always put in for what's called SRGs, which is special response grants. So if in the unfortunate event we do have another mass layoff like KUSD or Chrysler in Kenosha, we can request funds. And then actually that goes into the next page a little bit.
When was the Chrysler grant issued? Was it just a one-year grant? Or was this when Chrysler had the huge layoff a long time? Okay, so it's been, okay. But it expires this September?
September 30th.
Okay. It was based on projections of number of people we laid off. And when Chrysler offered those very nice severance packages,
mm-hmm.
I think we lost a lot of those potential people who would participate in the special Chrysler grant. So that's why the money's not being utilized to the extent that we thought it would.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. I look forward to some of the data that you're still processing. Yeah, if you could bring that back to this committee, that would be awesome. It's so nice to see your lovely face this come in person.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 7, Department of Human Services first quarter budget update.
I'm Laura Stays. I'm the fiscal director for Human Services, which encompasses all of our divisions. We started this report probably about a year and a half ago to this committee and to finance. And so we come in quarterly when we have all our numbers in and done. So this first page, since some of you are new, I'll walk you through and explain most of it. I'll explain all of it, but then some of these things you'll see on a monthly basis as a county board supervisor, and I'll tell you those pages. So the first page is just a recap of the four quarters. Obviously, I'm here for the first one, which is why that one's filled out. Aging and disability services. Anything that you see in a bracket is levy savings, potential levy savings. If it did not have a bracket, it would be a request for additional levy that we would need or somehow come up with during the year. And keep in mind, the first quarter is pretty new. We really don't see a lot until June, July, August, September is when we really see how the year is going to go. So for Aging and Disability Services, or DADS, that's the acronym for that one division, we have do have to show a savings of $51,000. And I on page 2, which I put the numbers on the bottom right, you flip the page, you'll see this type of format every quarter come in. Our state institutes are the very first line, number one. And you can see our annual budgets in the first column, and then we just do a quarter of that for the budget through 3/31/2012. So you can see we, if you just do a straight line prediction, we should have had like 147.5 days of these state institutes. Well, we're over. We're actually at 188 days in the actual column for 331. But our we're saving because our average cost per day, what we budgeted, and what's actually coming through is $435. So there's a savings there. So the annualized budget savings at the very last column is almost $300,000 for that particular line item. Then we have hospital and inpatient psychiatric, which it has the days for the whole budget year. And we are over on days, and we are also a little over on our average cost per day from the budget.
And is that through the Racine Hospital?
Yeah, the hospital and inpatients.
St. Luke's, right? That has nothing to do with the Kenosha Hospital.
No,
right.
No. And so for total inpatient between the institutes and the hospital, line 3 gives us a projected overage of our budget for the first quarter of $44,818. Then we have outpatient services, which are over $182,702. Keep in mind that state institute savings, that first line, that $288,000, is huge, because 4 or 5 years ago we were way over there. So preventive measures and all of our collaborations have kept us out of the higher cost placement and got us into the short-term stays, which is your the hospital and inpatient, and then doing more outpatient services. So if we can do more outpatient services and keep in mind the state institutes, we're a lot better. And then we have just our residential services. And those are our days from our budget through 3/31 in actual are down, but our costs are up. But still, we are showing, the days are so far down that we are showing quite a bit of savings there of $278,000. And then we have pharmacy services, which we did see a spike. It's over budget $91,910. We are seeing a lot of people losing their pharmacy, their health care plans, and things like that. So we are picking up a lot more. Plus, Badger Care Core is also being diminished and will especially be more diminished as of July 1st because of the changes in the state laws. So we do have some savings on line 7 from our other mental health and IOTA. So altogether, this particular area in their budget of mental health and IOTA services has a deficit of about $24,000. So if you offset that based upon, and I'm going back to their first page now, we have some staff vacancy and personnel benefit savings. We had a couple people that we budgeted for health insurance family, and they're now single. So we have some vacancy allowances there. So there's a net savings in that particular division of $51,000.
Sorry to interrupt, Chairman Gentz, a question.
Before you move on past this part, and before I forget my question, coming from finance, I just have a question about that first section where you saved the $288,000.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain to me how we can think it's going to cost us $1,044 a day and it ends up costing us $435 a day?
The first 3 to 5 days when somebody's in an estate institute is a lot higher. And based upon what their needs are and assessments, they do a lot of assessments day 1 and 2. So when we predicted the 590 days, we predicted them, because it's really almost, I think it's almost 1,400 a day for the first couple of days. So we do an average of what we spent the previous year for an average day cost, and the days of 590, which is an average from the previous year. And keep in mind, there were more people that had longer assessments and first day stays rather than coming out and going into a lesser restricted environment at the state institutes. And it drops dramatically. It's like you know, $400 and some a day.
So we're keeping them in the state institutes longer? Is that what you're telling me?
There's more admissions, but they're not longer assessment days.
Yeah, but you told me that initially it was $1,400. It could be as much as $1,400 a day.
Right, but if they're 2 to 3 days, we have longer assessment day stays in 2011 and actually 2010, mm-hmm. because when we do our budget, we're 6 months behind even from the previous year. So we looked at all of 2010 and what we spent, and then we looked at the cost. And we estimated an increase for July 1 of 20, for January 1 of 2012 in the budget for the state, and we haven't seen that increase yet to our state institute. So
all of our money goes to seniors.
Well, these are the state institutes.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, these are like.
Why is it?
Mendota.
Reason it's more expensive when they first show up. Every single new psych patient has to make sure they don't have TB or hepatitis or this, that, and the other. That would make them sick. That's what's expensive. And then if they don't stay long, they get booted out, so it's costless.
Right. Which goes to my question: how come it's only $435?
Right.
And I understand
average,
what you're saying. She's supposed to you said the same thing.
Because the initial assessments are in the beginning, but they have to watch them like off and make sure they're.
And some you don't have to.
Yeah.
You know
some,
what I mean?
So it's an average there. It's average.
It's an average with the information that we had at that time of budget. Well, in 2013, I'm sure you'll see this rate drop somewhere. I'm not going to say dramatically.
Why do we not have an inpatient?
We used to.
Facility?
St. Catharines used to have one, but
would it be financially advantageous for us to
Richmond, to Kenosha Memorial? So that's why we did.
Well, we have two other ones then. You know.
But that's why they closed it because of money.
I would like to remind the committee that we are recording.
I know we're recording, and it's true. They closed it because of money.
So. Yeah, what I can get out in an email is the actual statistics. I mean, I don't have it right now for what we base the 1,044 versus the 435, why we're seeing it.
Would we save money if
I'll send out some actual statistics, what we based it on, so it might be easier.
If we could get that to the committee via email, that'd be greatly appreciated. Is that okay? Email?
Right. Okay. We'll get it. Sure.
Would we actually save money if we had one in Kenosha? Would there be an advantage to that? Do we pay any more than Racine pays when they bring their people there? Do we know that?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. They have a room and board rate at St. Luke's.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My questions are
good. Thank you.
Okay.
Please continue.
So that's what makes up aging and disability services. And then Brookside, for the first quarter, we are showing a break even. Now, if we can go to page 3, which is this graph, it's got graphs on the bottom and everything.
Little 3 in the bottom right corner.
Yes. This is usually the report that I put in this report every year, this page. So we always add in, we break the revenue between our Medicare, Medicaid, and private pay. And you can see at the very top, it says the 2012 budget. And ADC means average daily census. So on a budgeted for Medicare, for example, we have 29.5. That is our Medicare revenue. If you go down to the year-to-date average in that column, we have 29.9. So we're slightly higher than our year-to-date. And for the revenue, we should be about 25%, and we're over at 25.7%. Keep in mind that Medicare adds about $156 to our bottom line to help offset other costs for Brookside. And then Medicaid, we had a budget of 92.5 for the year, average daily census. And we are at 89.4, and it's okay to be under for Medicaid because we lose about $90 a day for every Medicaid person. So we make it up with the more in Medicare, and then we're just about 25% on the Medicaid revenue for the first quarter. And keep in mind the target should be 25%. Then our private pay, we had budgeted 29 and we're about 29.5. And the rate for private pay is meant to break even. So we are just under the 22.5 of our total private pay with our census being a little bit over. And the reason being is that the $290 a day that we're charging for the private pay and the vet assessment, this number also includes a reimbursement for vet assessment, and those they weren't reimbursed. It's weird. We have a state vet assessment of $170 a vet a month, and the private pay people have that added to their bill. We cannot charge more for Medicare because the Medicare rate is an all-inclusive rate, and we cannot charge for Medicaid because we just get a flat Medicaid reimbursement rate. But this vet assessment is charged on a per daily basis, so we were short a little bit on that because if they're only there for a certain time frame, not the whole month. So this this revenue is really, it should be coming back up. It has to do with the assessment because this number is kind of skewed. It's 3,136. We should change this report, but they didn't. The last committee didn't want us to change it. They wanted us to include that assessment. So we're really just at, if I took the vet assessment portion out, we really are just right at our 25% mark. So I have to think about a better way of explaining this and putting this number. But all in all, we are, our total revenue then combined is about just under the 25%. Unfortunately, our occupancy rate should be about 151. Brookside has 154 beds total. And we budget for some vacancies, so we budget at 151 a day. We are at 148.8. And we do, because of our Medicare census going up, we do lose in turnover because it's short-term stays. We have to, people could leave like at 5 o'clock at night and supposedly we have to get an admission in the morning. Well, something happens between the hospital overnight and getting that patient out. And so we could lose a day or two. Plus we might need another day just to get the room prepared and everything. So there is a turnover rate.
The only question I have, that $177. So if you have private pay, are they charged more?
They're charged their $290 daily rate, and then they're charged $170 a month.
And
so
what's the Medicare charge rate? Not what you get, the charge rate. Is it the same?
No, we cannot charge for Medicare patients the state vet assessment because what we're reimbursed is an all-inclusive rate.
I understand.
So we can't charge.
So the bill for Medicare, the daily rate is less than for private care insurance.
No, we're reimbursed. Our Medicare, if someone's on Medicare in the facility, we're reimbursed upon the level of care that we are giving. And it's by a RUGS rate. It's by a standard rate. And that rate, let's say it's $600 a day, we get reimbursed. We are to include everything for that patient. That patient does not pay anything over and above if they're in for Medicare. So we take care of their food, their linen, their housekeeping, their drugs, everything.
On average, do you know the percent difference there would be between that rate for Medicare, that all-inclusive rate, and what of what I
answer my question.
Yes. Well, if you want to, okay. And what it is Medicare, we have an average reimbursement rate of $506 average for the through March 31st, okay? And then we have some Medicare expenses, ancillary expenses that we have to pay for, and I'm reading this off of page 4 at the bottom. So it says year-to-date average per day, which is Medicare A and B revenue, is $506.35. Then we have our ancillary expenses that will take off $128.46 a day. So then we have this net excess of Medicare revenue over expenses, which is $377. And we have operational to pay for that of 223. So it adds a Medicare rate on average added $154.76 to our bottom line to help offset like Medicaid patients.
The only question, and I'm so sorry, I'm following and I understand Medicare and the issues so much. I want to know, if you go in that nursing home, if you have Medicare and you have private pay, is your charge on your bill more on private pay than on Medicare? Exact same services. Is it legal to charge Medicare people less? Because I know you charge a certain amount, but then Medicare only pays so much. I get that. But is your bills different? Is that because I know whoever comes to my office is charging exactly the same for my services. I don't get the same from everybody, but I charge the same. So that was my question. Is your bill to Medicare per day the same as to private pay per day?
Our billing for private pay is $290 a day.
And your
no
billing
matter what
for Medicare
services,
is what?
No matter what services they get. For Medicare, we don't bill the patient. We bill Medicare, and they reimburse us. For the same services, but they could have Medicare because they're in there. They have a level of care that is a lot higher, perhaps, than private pay. Private pay is $200 for room and board is $290 a day. We would not charge. I don't have a different room and board rate for Medicare. It's $290.
Okay,
but then you have
that was the question.
Oh, okay.
That was the question.
Because the Medicare handles the health part, the health related issues that we get reimbursed for. Private pay, they have that's a room and board rate, and that could all and then
okay.
incidentals. And incidentals like Kleenex and cotton supplies and things like that. But they could have insurance if they have to have special like Part B kicks in for therapy. They're in there, things like that. So, but no, we don't charge a different room and board.
That's
$290. No matter who was in there.
That's my question.
Okay. Sorry.
Supervisor Decker has a question.
So when we charge $290 a day for the private pay rate, that is basically our cost.
Yes.
It looks like our cost per day is $223.12 approximately.
It's about $233 through the first quarter.
Okay.
But, again.
Right. So we're making a little money on private pay, making enough money on Medicare to cover the losses. Because how much do we make on Medicaid?
Medicaid, we lose about $90 a day. So
How much are we reimbursed?
We are about $146 a day.
Okay. $146?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm very glad to see the census numbers that we're hitting where we're at, and that that's what keeps our budget in line.
Well, wait until you see April and May.
Is that a good face or a bad face?
A good face.
Okay.
Because the last 2 weeks at Brookside, they've had to move their therapy into the Southport room.
Mm-hmm.
They are reaching 35 to 37 Medicare patients.
Outstanding.
Plus 15 Med B patients. They're like at 50 doing therapy in that building. And they're just like.
And that tiny little therapy room, no less.
They're
amazing.
That's why they're using
the Southport
room across the way during the day.
In this budget this year, you use no levy dollars, am I correct?
Absolutely.
Good. Thank you.
So on pages four...
I would like to have a report back to this committee on therapy numbers and a future plan for how you're going to address therapy patients. Because I think that our machines are old, I think our space is limited, and I think I'd like to have this committee be apprised of what they may be looking at in the future.
Right, and it's working through the budget process and through our CFP plan, and plus our administrator, Fran Petrick, is working with the county exec and myself, and so we're formulating as soon as we formulate it in the county exec.
It's something I think this committee should see and I should see.
It is a
because
special.
I think it's something that we need to really look at. We can't get blindsided.
It's crazy.
Yeah, we can't get blindsided. So thank you.
CIP for our Youth and Governance member is Capital Improvement Project. Mm-hmm. It's not the same CIP earlier.
Yeah.
Same acronym, different meaning.
Oh, boy.
Were there any questions at this point?
Well, and I just want to say, Joel, so pages 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 are the monthly financial statements that you see on your desk. So as soon as it goes through the trustee meeting, which is usually the Monday following the month, so they meet, and then when that's adopted, then it goes right on your desk. So normally we don't keep this in this report for you because you're getting these, so that's okay. You'll get these every month. So if I go back to page 1, Children and Family Services is showing a savings of about $47,000. Their placement is on the last page. Their juvenile placement report is on the last page of my report, page 9. And again, it's kind of like with Aging and Disability Services, where we have an average daily rate and we have days. And what's happening is our average number of days in some of our court order and placement categories are increasing. The average rate is coming down about $3 a day. So we're kind of offsetting one with the other. And at this point through March, we're only projecting about $47,000. Health then is showing $16,520, and for those of you who may not are new, our Division of Health actually has a, we do the city and we do the county. So the city pays, has their contribution, and then we have our side. So what you see is just our side. It's the county levy. We don't put down any kind of city savings, because I'm sure you want to know just county levy on this report. And then for the medical examiner, veterans, and workforce development, at this point, we think we're just breaking even. So all together, it's about $114,000, the savings for the first quarter. And again, we'll come back for each of the other quarters. And I usually give the September 30th update at our budget hearings.
Are there any other questions?
And I will get the email out about the rates.
Supervisor Deck?
With the consortium, how is W-2 affected? Or is it?
Well, we were going to save it until we knew more.
Okay, well, that's fine. If you're going to bring it up later, I just...
Well, we thought we'd talk about it next month.
Okay, that sounds...
We might know more.
That sounds good. And then last budget, we had problems with the wraparound... Well, not problems, but... whole wraparound services and all
I'm
that.
I'm so happy to tell you that.
That is not a happy face.
I'm so glad you brought it up. In fact, it was about 13 and a half months later that we finally got our state contract signed for the $1.5 million GPR this year. And we have every reason to believe it will again appear as an amendment to our contract for next year for $1.5 million.
Okay.
So we're good to go.
Good.
We are good to go on that one. And the W-2 issue, I don't know if you heard, I mean, I can say that the W-2, as of January 1st, 2013, the program went out on an RFP in the state. And again, there's no levy, county levy, in our W-2 program. So we'll know more next month if, I don't know if you want to,
there's a lot of head movement, so if you've got something, say it.
Well, just briefly, not to go into a whole lot of detail, the RFP for W-2 that we enter into with the state every 3 years or so is a much different RFP than years past. And after doing much deliberation with our financial people, with our county executive, there are too many risks involved in the W-2 RFP this year with the consortium model that has been proposed, which is for our area, which is the southeast area, entering into a contract with 6 counties. We have only been responsible for our own separate counties in years past, and this proposal combines 4 for our area, 6 counties, other parts of the state, 17 counties, for efficiencies. And whoever is the lead county who gets the proposal, they're responsible for the performance of all the other counties and they take all the risk associated with that. And so we thought that it would not be in our best interest to go after a proposal of this sort where we'd be responsible for five other counties.
Plus the capitated rate.
Yeah,
plus the capitated rate. That's what was the cherry on Ice Cream Sunday, because they gave us a capitated rate that was pretty much terrible. Yeah.
Would you be assigned if she's coming? Did they do that? Or do you have to ask?
You actually have to serve the proposal.
Yes.
And to my knowledge, no counties are submitting.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're
private agencies.
It's kind of written that way. We're hearing. So we've been contacted by just two. We've heard of three. At least to use our space facility costs, which is nice.
So what does that mean for our staffing and things like that, that work in that department?
It depends on what type of agreement they enter into with us, and that's where the negotiations and the discussions are taking place, because we indicated the money has been significantly reduced, and so we have shared with them what our costs are, what our staff costs are, what our building costs are, and they're all interested in operating the program out of our job center. It's just a matter of how much they can afford in these various locations. Until the successful proposer is selected, we won't really know a lot of details. It will have some impact, but we don't know to what level at this point in time. But they are interested in hiring some of our staff and operating some job centers.
Thank you.
Supervisor Frederson.
Now, from what I understand, there's a group that does it like in the Wild counties already. Maximus does it in Milwaukee, is that
correct? Correct.
So there's agencies already that has been doing this for a long period of time already. That
private agencies.
There are some private agencies. Mm-hmm. It's a mix throughout the state.
Right.
About 40 counties operate W-2 programs, and about 30, maybe 25 privates operate W-2 programs.
Any other questions? As always, thank you, and we know where to find you if we have questions about Medicare, Medicaid, private pay.
There you go.
Tell me. Agenda item 8, such other businesses authorized by law. Don't think that there's anything. Item 9, committee member comments. Supervisor Noodle.
I want to make a comment. I believe something is going to be in the paper tomorrow. There was a press release or about a new program with the Nurse Family Partnership Program. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that or not.
Yeah, you have it. You approved that grant a while back.
I think that was the previous board.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was probably February that we got it, and it's they follow. Oh God, now you're talking to a fiscal person telling me about the program. They follow families, young, you know, when they're going to have children, and they follow the families one-on-one through a 2 or 3 year period. So it's a grant that had its home. Our nurses are actually visiting in the home.
Are these at-risk children, or for mental or
they
physical
can be, or
disabilities?
They can be just referred from doctors and things like that.
Okay.
So it's, I mean, when was that, Sharon? Was that like January?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good grant, but I can't. And we could do is probably forward you the resolution information. Would you like that? But we just geared up. So we had to hire people right away, and so maybe that's why there's a press release.
We could find those on the minutes, couldn't we?
Yeah,
we have that
available
to us.
Yeah, we would have the resolution.
It's just a few little bullet points of what it's all about, just 3 or 5 bullet points.
Great, thank you.
Okay, one of the things that my comment basically was, especially with the new people on the board, some of this was done prior to us coming in, which we're not familiar with that, or we're not aware of it. And especially if it's going to be a press conference or something, it would be nice to let us know in advance instead of just hearing from other people or by reading in the paper something that is going to come up, something like that. Yes.
I didn't know there was a meeting. We would have probably seen it at the same time.
Well, I just happened to see it on the internet today, and and then I was talking to someone. They asked, I said, what? You know,
yeah.
It would be nice if something like that happens in the future to let us know.
If we're aware of it, sir.
Or whoever's in charge.
Any other committee member comments?
No.
I have one. I think you all were CC'd on the email about... two town halls, one dealing with some of the subject matter that we covered tonight. We do have a regional labor economist who does cover our area. She, because it was somebody, now it's somebody different. I think it's a female still. Is available to do presentations and things like that. So in terms of getting the word out to the community about the outlook for jobs in Kenosha, what the educational requirements are, what some of the programs that are offered, not only that we're administering funds from the feds through the state, but also things that Gateway has. That might be something as a committee that we would like to do, so I'm dropping that seed in your brains now. Let it grow a little bit, see where it ends up. I'd certainly love to hear back from you, all of you, on your thoughts about doing that. The second thing, just a few procedural issues. Previously, I came from a committee that kept things very loose, but the discussion content was not quite as information heavy, and folks here have a lot of questions. There's a lot to hear. There's a lot to learn. So when you do ask a question of someone, if you could at least let me know, because I know folks are sort of jumping in and others are sort of waiting in line, just to be fair to everybody, that would be greatly helpful. Refer your comments through the chair to the person and wait to be recognized before you speak. Other than that, that concludes my comments. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved. Second.
Thank you.
You can't adjourn. Somebody else.
Did you make the motion and second it yourself?